Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll-free 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Oh, well, you know, we say Friday shows are good, but now we did it on a Monday. Now we've got a great Monday show. I'm just going to tell you, if you want to talk about God, there's probably not a better radio program on anywhere in the world than this, the next 2 hours. Arguments for and against the existence of God for 2 hours today. I am Cy Kellett, your host. Our guest is Trent Horn, who himself is a convert to the Catholic faith. He's an apologist here at Catholic Answers, the author of a whole bunch of books, including this one, Why We're Catholic. That's his latest one. And I say this one because I'm holding it up for the cameras for those who are watching the streaming version of the show. And in addition, Persuasive Pro-Life, Hard Sayings, A Catholic Approach to Answering Bible Difficulties, and perhaps most appropriately for today's show, the author of Answering Atheism. Hi, Trent. How are you? Trent?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me on the show again. I guess it's a regular occurrence for the Catholic Answer staff, but I'm always grateful to be on the show. So,
I think we might have a little lag there. I don't know what you guys are, what's up with the sound, but I think we have just a moment of lag, but we'll get that straightened out. Our number, if you would like to call and talk about arguments for and against the existence of God, if you want to give us your argument for or against the existence of God, or test out something that you have heard or been thinking about, give us a call, 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. I will also stress that we do our very best to be friendly and helpful during these shows, but we want you to really feel welcome. An atheist is welcome to call, an agnostic welcome to call, a scientistic libertarian is welcome. Call anybody. You can call 888-318-7884. How are we doing on the sound there for Trent?
Can you guys hear me? If not, we might have to try to redo our connection here.
I think you guys should probably dial him on the phone because we're getting a delay. There's something. I think you're in Phoenix, right? And Phoenix, they have internet there, but I think it's. No, I'm just teasing. We got some kind of internet problem going on.
So it probably melted.
It might have melted. Are you still super hot there in Phoenix?
No, it's actually doing a lot better. So, yeah. Well, it's funny. People would say like, oh, it's 92 outside. Let's go to the park.
I know. We're here. It's just the opposite. We stay in when it's 92. I think we got better sound now. We have a full lines. As I said, it's 2 hours. So if you have a question, if you have a conversation you'd like to have with Trent about the existence of God, for arguments for and against, 888-318-7884. The number. I think we can go to calls, Trent, because your sound sounds good to me. Let's do a test. Test.
Testing 1, 2. Let's talk about arguments for the existence of God. And what's fun, actually, with this show, usually I'll do a show called Why Are You an Atheist? And we talk about arguments for God with those who aren't persuaded by them. If you're Catholic, if you're somebody who is persuaded, but you have a question, you want to discuss them, you get to call. This is a rare opportunity. So to open it up to our friends who also believe in God and want to talk about this important subject.
Anybody can call 888-318-7884. We go now to Micaiah in Virginia, listening online. Micaiah, your question or comment about the existence of God for Trent Horn.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
Trent, I love your work. I've been listening to some of your debates. I am an atheist, but I like to hear both sides of the arguments and kind of keep my mind fresh. I love your work on the morality side of abortion. I've listened to some of your stuff, and you've really got me thinking there. I'm not quite fully with you on the whole it should be a legal thing, but you've definitely pushed the needle. So,
thank you very much.
To bring that up.
What can I do for you when it comes to this topic?
Yeah. So I've heard you make an argument from contingency, and. I can see where it would make sense, maybe coming from a Catholic perspective, where there wouldn't really necessarily be the question as to whether consciousness and intelligence or personality are contingent to themselves. But how would you respond if someone were to ask about, you know, maybe the underlying assumptions that consciousness is not contingent itself? Right, because it has to be intelligent, conscious, have a personality.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure exactly where your question is coming from. Are you saying that if the idea of consciousness or personal awareness is contingent, then God himself could not be conscious or aware of things? I'm trying to follow you where you're going.
Not so much the concepts, but so let me back up a bit. So the argument from contingency, I'm not sure I completely understand it. Maybe you could kind of help me understand it.
Sure. Yeah, well, it's phrased in different ways. For example, in my book, Answering Atheism, I put forward a simple one based on the work of Stephen T. Davis and William Lane Craig, which ultimately goes back to Leibniz. And basically it says that everything that exists has an explanation for its existence in itself or in something outside of itself. And the universe as a whole does not have an explanation in itself. Therefore, the universe has an explanation outside of itself. And the next part of the argument is kind of blunt, but I think it can be defended, which is that any explanation for the universe would have to be God or a necessary being. Therefore, God exists. That I argue against the possibility of infinite series of contingent explanations. And what you mean by the idea of consciousness or intelligence, I can plug that in where you like. But the idea, to summarize the contingency argument, would be this. If things can be different, or if they could have not been, there must be an explanation for why they exist. But those explanations can't be of an infinite series. Therefore, the ultimate explanation for reality must just be in something that has to exist. And God, by definition, is just existence itself, essentially. So what are your thoughts?
Well, so it sounds like you're starting from sort of a version of the Kalam. Right, you know, we need to have a cause for the universe.
Let me jump in. This, while okay. I argue against the impossibility of an infinite series of causes, the Kalam argument says that the universe must have had a beginning. Therefore, it had a cause that brought something from nothing, and that cause would have to have divine attributes. The contingency argument says even if the universe were eternal, had always existed, there's still the problem of answering the question, why is there an eternal universe instead of nothing at all? There could have been nothing. What is the explanation for the existence of this universe that could have failed to exist, that is contingent? And the argument would lead ultimately to a necessary being that explains why there is something rather than nothing.
Micah, I'm gonna let you follow up on that, but we're gonna take a break real quick. We're gonna straighten out some of these sound issues, and we'll be right back after this with more on Catholic Answers Live.
Don't you just love listening to Trent Horn? Did you know you can book Trent or any of our other great speakers to speak at your parish or special event? Contact one of our seminar coordinators through the Speakers Bureau section on Catholic.com today to find out more information.
It might be said that anti-Catholic notions of the Church's history are the original fake news. With all the misinformation being spread, where does one look for the truth? In The Real Story of Catholic History, Professor Steve Weidenkopf gives you the facts on over 50 of the most common misconceptions about Catholic history and shows how to answer them simply and powerfully. Whether it's to answer claims about Catholicism's supposedly pagan origins, old myths about the Inquisition that never seem to go away, or more modern errors that anti-Catholics put forth, The Real Story of Catholic History is an essential resource for every Catholic's bookshelf. Order your copy of The Real Story of Catholic History today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
The Catholic Answers Minute. I'm Father Vincent Serva. In Luke 8:16, Jesus told the crowd that no one who lights a lamp conceals it, but rather he puts it on a stand where people may benefit from it. There's nothing hidden, he says, that will not become visible, and nothing secret that will not become known and come to light. He obviously has some things to say and is concerned with how attentive we are to him. For those who are half-hearted, what little faith they have will disappear. But to those who are earnest and truly want to know his will, to those he reveals himself. By the very fact that you believe, to that degree, you have come into the light. But he always has more to say. Could it be that he wants our attention at this very moment? How interested are we? To the degree that we put him above our agendas right now, to that degree will we receive further enlightening. I'm Father Vincent Serpa for Catholic Answers, Catholic.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. 2 hours today, arguments for and against the existence of God. You really can't get a more basic question than that. We left Micaiah in Virginia hanging just a little bit while we straightened out our sound issues. Micaiah, I believe the ball is in your court. Did you want to respond to anything that Trent has said thus far about the argument from contingency?
So I think we left it off at the contingency is different from the Kalam because the Kalam says that it had a beginning and that's why it needs God. The contingency argument says even if it didn't have a beginning, it needs an explanation.
Yeah, so Kalam is concerned with the question about that the universe began to exist. Contingency is concerned with the question about the universe could have failed to exist or not existed at all.
Micaiah, we have just a load of calls on the line, so I'm going to move on. Thank you so much for that call. We go now to Kenneth in Detroit, Michigan, also listening online. Kenneth, your question for Trent Horn.
Yes, the cough screener said she was hearing an echo when she spoke, so I hope you gentlemen don't receive it. But an agnostic asked me, if we do not have perfect free will, therefore compromised by sin against us, our sin, this fallen world. So if that free will is in itself compromised and flawed, how then this person that's an agnostic thought that this is not an all-knowing, loving, perfect God that would create such a free will? I hope that a good synopsis of the question, folks.
Made sense to me. Trent?
Yeah. So the question was essentially, if God exists and he's perfect, wouldn't he give us perfect free will or a will that isn't tainted by things that would cause us to choose evil, like inclinations to evil, concupiscence, ignorance, things like that? And my response to that would be to say, well, when God, according to Christian revelation, when God created human beings, he did give them, I wouldn't call it perfect free will, but he gave them minds that were free from inclinations to sin like you and I have. They were finite, they were limited, but Adam and Eve, our first parents, they did not have concupiscence, for example. That's why when they were in the Garden of Eden and they were without clothes, they didn't have lustful thoughts towards one another. They weren't asexual beings, but they didn't have the thought of using one another that we unfortunately almost automatically have when we see a nude form that we have to guard ourselves against. So I would say that kind of free will the agnostic describes, human beings were given that, but even still, humans are still free. Even if you don't have the inclination to sin, you can choose obedience or disobedience. And when our first parents disobeyed, they caused an effect that would happen for the rest of humanity, which inclines us to sin. However, what Catholics teach, this is different from some Protestants, we do not believe that man is totally depraved or that sin is so powerful that we're incapable of responding to God's grace. We still have enough free will so that if God offers his grace to us, we're able to recognize it and accept it or recognize it and reject it. So we still have the ability to choose right and wrong. It's not determined outside of us, and we're not sinful robots, essentially. So if God loves us, he's given us the choice to choose good or evil, and we're held responsible for those choices. So I think this agnostic's question, it doesn't succeed. God has given us, he's created us how we are, and we're still morally accountable for our actions and are free. So God hasn't done anything wrong in creating us and allowing us to have inclinations that might pull us away from him, even though we do have free will in general.
Kenneth? No? Oh, well, he's not there. But all right, Trent.
His free choice to hang up.
I wonder today if it is his free choice, given the way the technology is working. Let's try Russell in Traverse City, Michigan, listening on 88.3 Barriga Broadcasting.
Hi, Si. Hi, Trent. Thanks for taking my call.
Happy to.
Eighth grade religion. Thank you so much. I teach eighth grade religion here in Traverse City, and we are about to step into the problem of evil because we're looking at the existence of God. Because fun. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to know if we're about stepping into the problem of evil. We've covered the moral argument, and I wanted to comment. Do you think that the moral argument kind of makes the problem of evil defunct?
It doesn't make it defunct. So the question is, if the moral argument shows that God is necessary for objective good and objective evil to exist, then the problem of evil doesn't really work because it's relying on a borrowed concept that requires God. If you're saying you're mad that there are objective evils and only God explains objective evils, then God still exists. And God is the ultimate standard of goodness, according to the moral argument. The moral argument, if God exists, he must be the ultimate standard of goodness. He couldn't be an evil God, as the philosopher Stephen Law says, or some kind of limited deity, because that wouldn't explain morality either. So I think that it poses a challenge, and I do offer it in my own case for the existence of God and my answer to the problem of evil. But I think the problem of evil is such an emotionally powerful argument, and there's many different layers to it. The moral argument should be one tool we use to answer the problem of evil. And traditionally, the answer to the problem of evil has been to say that there's no logical contradiction between God and evil, because evil is not a thing God made. Evil is an absence of good, and if God's all-powerful and all-knowing, he can allow suffering or an absence of good if he can bring more good from it or prevent a greater evil. And just because in some cases we can't imagine how God would do that, it doesn't follow an infinite being like him could not. We're not in a good position to know. When we say this world is crummy and God couldn't have made it, we lack vision of everything. It'd be like someone who stands 1 inch away from the Mona Lisa and says, this is a crummy painting. Well, no, they're not able to, because it just looks black and smudgy. Well, they can't see the whole picture. The same with our universe and instances of suffering. We can't see the whole picture like God can. And then the moral argument, as I said, I would add that there at the end, that shows these standards, the idea we think it's unfair, things ought to be a certain way, make more sense in a religious view of the world than an atheistic view of it. And I talk about that in my book, Answering Atheism, at length. I guess morality and evil would cover probably about 5 chapters. And I covered a little bit in my new book, Why We're Catholic.
Okay, Russell.
Hey, that's awesome. Thank you so much. That's the direction I was going. So it makes me feel good.
Hey, Russell, thanks for teaching eighth grade religion. God bless you.
And thanks you guys for being on the air and educating people. It's
all
awesome.
Right. All right. Well, arguments for and against the existence of God is our topic today. Trent Horn is our guest. 888-31-TRUTH is our number. We are happy to take your call, whether you are Catholic or not Catholic. As a matter of fact, any perspective you're coming from, we just want to talk about the arguments for and against the existence of God. We go now to Kate in Billings, Montana, listening on KJCR. Kate, your question for Trent Horn.
Hi, thank you so much. Okay, and this is a question because I was hoping I could word it in the form of an argument, but it's actually a doubt that I've had in my heart from time to time in my life. And I've always quelled it by reminding myself of all the reasons why I believe in God and why I believe in eternity and my faith. But the doubt that sometimes creeps into my thought process is, and it goes something like this, what if eternity and heaven and God are just these comforting stories we tell ourselves to get ourselves through the tough times, and it's just, you know, it's just a nice idea. And then I remind myself, okay, there's definite things that have happened in my life that I consider to be miracles. And so that proves to me that there is something much greater going on here, but I'm going to leave it at that. Does that make any sense, that question?
Yeah, sure. I see it's more of a psychological problem. You know, we think like, well, what if there is no God or no heaven? And we think, I might have plausibly thought of all this just to feel better. So this isn't really an argument against our faith as much as it's an alternative explanation. And what I would say is, well, what evidence is there, concrete evidence, to accept this alternative explanation versus, no, God really does exist, and there is a heaven, and this is what I'm called to, and that does really give me hope and joy. Because you could play these kind of worst fear games with anything in your life. I mean, I could sit around and say, well, did my wife marry me because she really loves me, or did she just choose to marry me because she just wanted to be married to someone incredibly handsome, dashing, and a successful apologist, you know, or at least someone's really good at embellishing things, I suppose. You know, but you can think about that. You know, does my wife really love me, or is she just using our marriage to get these goods that I don't know about? And like, if someone said that, you'd say, well, that's possible, but do you have a reason to think your spouse or your child or someone you love actually did this? Possible is not the same thing as probable. And I would say, well, no, I have no reason to think my wife did this. In fact, I have many reasons to think she would not do that. And it'd be the same for God and for heaven, to say, I have no reason to think I really did make this up, and I have reasons to think that it's not made up. For example, the fact that I have a deep feeling inside that I matter, that I have worth that transcends my own limited 80 to 90 year lifespan, that I was made for something, and the fact that I recoil and revolt against death so passionately with the idea that I ought to have unending existence, or at least not just unending, but perfect, blissful unending existence. And, you know, looking also at the objective evidence of God creating the world and God becoming man counterbalances that mere alternative explanation. So just like, you know, we have with our family members, we can entertain scary scenarios. If it's not evident, if there's no evidence behind them, then it's just we're letting our fears get to us when we really shouldn't. The fears are real, but we shouldn't let them get to us. Is that helpful, Kate, as like kind of a start?
Yes. And then it brings me to another thing, which I've kind of tried to go over with a couple of my kids, have had moments where there was, especially, I'll try to make this brief, but my son was in his growing up years, he's now a college kid, but he had friends that ended up making decisions that we were saying, you know, that's not the kind of decision we would like you to make. That's not the type of direction we would like you to take with your life. And this is when he was much younger. Even, you know, kind of small things like what type of music you listen to, what kind of movie would you go watch, what type of behavior do you engage in, decisions you're making, as those become less and less small and bigger things.
Kate, we're running up against the clock. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but we're running up against the clock. You were going to make a point.
Just saying that he's trying to be good, and he's, you know, kind of saying, trust me, you will be glad you made these hard decisions. And then inside I have this doubt, like it would be so much more fun to be bad, obviously. And so I feel like I'm responsible for him, you know. Anyway, does that make sense?
I think what I'd say, Kate, what's beautiful about our faith, I was working on a writing today on natural law, that God's rules are not arbitrary. The rules our faith gives us are meant to make us happy. I thought about defining sin this way. Sin is an unsatisfying shortcut to happiness. Whenever people choose to sin, they do so because they want a shortcut to happiness, but it will ultimately leave them unsatisfied. So, you know, it's kind of like when you're out, when I'm walking around at Disneyland, it's like, I'm hungry, so I want a shortcut to being full. Instead of going and sitting down and having a good dinner, I just eat three churros. And, you know, it's a shortcut to being full, but you know what? It's unsatisfying. It does not fill me the way I would like, and I end up regretting it later. And it's the same. You say, well, do I want him to have to follow all these rules? Isn't he going to be happy? The happiest people I know, like you have people who have material wealth, follow worldly things. They may be happy for a bit, but when tragedy strikes, they're left, what do I do now? My meaning is gone. Or they're always worried about their material things or their relationships being taken away from them. Rather, when we look at the faith, being faithful, holy people, the saints, their happiness is found in God, and nothing can take that away. No tragedy in this life that they have sorrow, but they always turn toward the inner joy in our Lord Jesus Christ.
Kate, thank you very much for that call. Trent, I'm going to have to talk to you about evil talk about churros. They do not deserve it. The churro does not deserve it. We'll be right back with more discussion, arguments for and against the existence of God right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
new from EWTN Publishing, The Four Last Things. Father Wade Menezes presents the truths of salvation. This guide will help you become eternity-minded in your daily life by demonstrating the reality of hell, dispelling sentimental notions about heaven, and bringing to light key truths you need to know about death and judgment. The Four Last Things, new from EWTN Publishing, now available at EWTNRC.com.
This is Tim Staples, and I'm here to tell you about a new resource so good it deserves a place in the library of every Catholic who is serious about his or her faith. Did you ever read something in the Bible that made you just scratch your head? Have you ever been challenged to defend a seemingly scandalous verse of Scripture? You're not alone. The Bible contains more than a few hard sayings, apparent contradictions, myth-like events and figures, and passages that seem to be embarrassingly out of step with modern culture or science. How can you, as a Catholic, reconcile such things with your own faith and with what the Church teaches about the inspiration and inerrancy of sacred Scripture? Don't worry. As my good friend and brother in the faith, Trent Horn, explains in his new book, Hard Sayings, A Catholic Approach to Answering Bible Difficulties, God's revelation in the Bible is not something Catholics need to be ashamed of. In Hard Sayings, the first book of its kind, Trent examines dozens of the most confounding passages in Scripture and offers clear, reasonable, and Catholic explanations to unlock their true meaning. He also provides basic principles for reading and interpreting Scripture that the wisdom of the Church has developed over the centuries. Order your copy of Hard Sayings today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or by asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Trent Horn, our guest both hours today, author of so many things, Persuasive Pro-Life, Hard Sayings, Why We're Catholic, and probably the most relevant one today, Answering Atheism. Not because everybody who calls is an atheist necessarily. You don't have to be. Any questions or comments you have, arguments for and against the existence of God, our topic, we're happy to take those. You just call us, 888-318-7884. We will try to have a polite, engaging, and if we're really good, even charitable conversation with you about it. We go now to Terry in Cleveland, Ohio, listening on EWTN.com. Terry, your question for Trent Horn.
Hi, thank you for taking my question. One of the things I've heard people con to you about is, you know, they didn't believe in God because, you know, he would have prevented things like Hitler, you know, but my thinking is that people have free will and they can choose to be evil, and it's up to the people that are good to stop that evil. My question is about natural disasters like earthquakes and tsunamis where very innocent, you know, young lives are being lost, and why God would do something like that.
Mm-hmm. No, that's a good question, Terry, and let me parse out a few points on it. This would be a version of the argument from evil that focuses on suffering or pain or what we call natural evil. How should we respond to this? First, I would say that it's interesting. Most people understand the weakness of arguments from evil based on moral evil. And yet the weakness in that argument is similar to the weakness in the arguments from natural evil. We say, well, look at rape, genocide, murder. How could God allow this? And what many lay people figure out is say, well, no, God could have good reasons for allowing these evils. One of those good reasons could be is that because we have free will, we can do many, many goods. And the other goods and free will outweigh the bad that is caused by rape, genocide, things like that. And I think we need to take a similar approach to natural evil. We say, well, why would God allow tsunamis and thunder, you know, and hurricanes and disease and things like that? And what we should say here is that we should ask, well, could God have good reasons for allowing these things, the reasons that outweigh or outbalance it? And I can think of several. Number one, it's not necessarily the tsunami or the hurricane that's bad. Like wind and water are not evil. What we recoil against is the fact that because we're limited mortal creatures, we can become injured and we can be killed. So it's not even the natural disasters that people are objecting to. Because like if there were tsunamis, but we couldn't be heard and we could drown, we might consider them to be kind of annoying, but we wouldn't like think of them as these, you know, unexplainable acts of evil. So I think the natural evil question is really asking, why does God allow humans and other animals to feel pain and die? That's really the question behind the argument from natural evil. And here's what I would answer. Number one, it was not God's original plan for human beings to die. God created human beings, and in the original state of justice, he gave them graces so that they would not die. They would not become sick. But when our first parents disobeyed God, they lost those gifts of grace and could not pass them on to us. And so that kind of natural evil can be explained by moral evil. Number two, God could have good reasons even still for allowing pain and finite creatures. There could be a lot more evil if we could not feel pain. Non-human animals and humans, we use pain all the time to function in the world. There are people who cannot feel pain, you know, and, you know, if they put their hand on a stove, they only realize it's burning when they think they smell bacon or something. So we need pain to kind of helps us function in this world. And finally, if God chooses to make a limited world, you know, if we're not infinite spiritual beings, he makes embodied creatures that are limited, then as embodied creatures get more perfect, as the lion grows, humans grow, environments change, other creatures become less perfect. The lion gets more perfect, the zebra gets less perfect, you know, things like that. So as limited, finite, embodied creatures interact, there's going to be these imperfections because of their limits, but God can still bring good from the existence of finite embodied creatures that you wouldn't have if God had just made us all angels who couldn't feel pain and die. That there are other bodily goods that we have that God has given to us, but ultimately God in the next life, whatever we suffer, moral or natural evil in this life, God will redeem so that we'll have a perfect embodied existence in the next life. And I think all of that put together shows the argument for natural evil does not show God does not exist. And ultimately, if there is no God, how can there be any nature at all that we're trying to explain in the first place?
Terry,
is that helpful, Terry?
Wow, that is the best answer I've ever gotten to that question. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Terry.
I'm glad that can be helpful.
So, Trent, you're saying like, There are goods that come with us being embodied creatures, and am I right? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, because if you think about it, like we say, well, I think it's bad when humans feel pain, die from diseases. We're embodied creatures, and we have pain receptors to allow us to function. And some people may say, well, I don't like that. So could God have done something differently? He could have. He could have made us like angels. We are just. Yeah. Spiritual creatures, we have no body, but then we wouldn't have bodily goods. We wouldn't have the tender, compassionate touch of one of the Sisters of Charity to a leper who's dying, that even in that moment of natural evil, there's this amazing goodness that shines forth from it. Or how about this? The marital act, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
That's an amazing good. We can do something that even the angels cannot. Think of the angels. They have amazing intellects. They have the ability to understand and be able to see things in our universe we cannot. And yet, angels cannot procreate in the creation of life like us. And the only reason we can do that and be able to procreate and hold in our very hands someone who resembles us, but also resembles an infinite creator, is because we have bodies.
Yep.
So there's a good. And if that good, those goods are good enough, then the bads associated with fallen embodied creatureliness, then they're outweighed. One last point that I'd bring up about the problem of evil many people don't address or don't bring up is that many atheists will say, fine, it's logically possible God and evil can coexist, but there's so much evil in the world, so much evil, how could there be a God? And it's important when we talk about evil and suffering, we have to balance when evil and suffering makes us think God does not exist. We say, well, what about all the other evidence for God? You have to look at the whole picture. William Lane Craig is a great example. So, Si, if I told you, I know a guy who weighs 380 pounds,
mm-hmm.
What do you think are the odds that he is a professional athlete?
Unless he's a sumo wrestler, very, very low.
Yes, that you would say very, very low. But then I told you, wait, he is a professional sumo wrestler. And I would say, what are the odds? Because you notice there, you say, well, wait, I need more background information. This person.
Right.
I need more background information. Because if I only look at, he weighs 380 pounds, is he an athlete? Probably not. I say, well, he's a sumo wrestler. Oh, well, then it all fits together. So if I say, well, look at all this pain and suffering in the world, could there be a God? Oh, no. But then I say, well, wait, but in this world, there's also in that pain and suffering, objective moral good and evil. There's a design in the universe. There's a universe that couldn't exist unless it was created. Now what are the odds? And it changes things. You have to look at all the evidence.
Right. And then when you add to that the incarnation of Christ, it becomes...
Right. So the Christian, and as the catechism says, that ultimately the problem of evil and suffering cannot be fully answered without the gospel and the message of God becoming man, that God not only, you know, created us, not only God is just passively looking at the universe, like, oh, they'll be okay, I'm going to work them through this, I'll get them to heaven. God entered into humanity and endured natural evil. He endured hunger. He endured temptation in the desert. He endured fear. You know, he endured these different natural evils. He endured moral evils, people reviling him, chasing him out of town, trying to kill him, and then being tortured and executed. So God became man and became familiar with these evils for the purpose of redeeming us from them and showing us God conquers evil, evil doesn't conquer God.
Amen. Amen to that. We go now to John in Cincinnati, Ohio, listening on Sacred Heart Radio, 740 AM. John, your question for Trent Horn about the arguments for or against the existence of God.
Yeah, I don't mean to drag you from the more philosophical into the nitty-gritty of science and particle physics, but...
drag away, John. Go ahead.
Lately, there's been a lot of things with the Higgs boson and the Higgs field, right? These things that you read about. And, you know, it seems to me that a particle without mass that can transcend the speed of light and a universal energy field that gives those particle mass are more of an argument for God than against God. And yet if I do some kind of internet search, I really don't see anything much on the topic available. Well, how do you feel about this?
Yeah, I think that ultimately the arguments or reasons we believe God exists are going to be philosophical, not scientific. Science gives us facts to work with to form in philosophical arguments, but the goal of science is to explain observed features in the natural world. But science cannot answer every question we have, and there may very well be, and I believe that there are, things that exist that lie outside the domain of science. God would be one of them, but there's other things like numbers, propositions, universals, like we see red things, but is there just redness? Yes, I certainly believe these universals exist, but they're not something science can find. So when science peers deeper into reality and sees reality is made up of atoms and electrons and particles like quarks, and there's other elements in the particle field like the Higgs boson and how they interact, that helps us understand the natural world, but science will never give us a complete explanation of reality because it's not meant to answer all of those questions. So I think, though, that when we look at physics, we don't see anything that shows that God does not exist because we're just trying to explain the natural world, what's in it, not its ultimate origins. I do think, though, that as physics more and more studies the world, we see the world is intelligible. There are laws of physics that are very narrow, that if they were changed even by an infinitesimal fraction, we would not have life at all. So I think those provide clues that God does exist, or at least that there is a creator of the universe that has made the universe this way so it's intelligible, and so that even against all fantastic odds, life would exist. A good book on the subject about modern physics would be Stephen Barr. He's a physicist at the University of Delaware, at least used to be. I don't know if he still teaches there or not. But Stephen Barr had a great book called Modern Physics, Ancient Faith. I would highly recommend on a lot of these questions about the intersection between physics and science. And also our good friend from the show, Stacey Trisankos, she wrote a book called Particles of Faith. And she looks at it from a chemist perspective, which is very similar, obviously, to physics. So that might be, hopefully that'd be helpful to you.
Okay, John from Cincinnati.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. 888-318-7884, our number. By the way, Stephen Barr, you probably know this, Trent, but I will just alert the listener, has founded a group called the Society of Catholic Scientists. And if you are a scientist and a Catholic and you'd like to know more about it, just search Society of Catholic Scientists, and they'd love to have you. Again, our topic this hour, arguments for and against the existence of God. Trent Horn, the author of Answering Atheism Among Many Things, is our guest. Our number, 888-31-TRUTH. We'll be right back with more after this on Catholic Answers Live.
This is Bishop Robert Baer, and you're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
Wouldn't it be great to have a book to give to anyone to explain exactly why Catholics believe what we believe? The good news is that now there is. Why We're Catholic is the groundbreaking new resource by apologist Trent Horn, that one book you can hand to anyone as a starting point for helping them find their way into or back to the practice of the Catholic faith. Don't miss out on the most important, life-changing book to come along in years. Order your copies of Why We're Catholic today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
I fell away from the practice of my Catholic faith in my college years. But after I got married and we were expecting our first child, I had an enormous tug to come back to my roots. I went to an incredible Catholic store in my town and was blown away by the kindness and knowledge of the staff. They not only recommended books for me and my bride, but they promised me prayer support for my journey back to the faith. Wow, what an incredible Catholic store. I have to credit them for helping me on my journey home to the Catholic Church. Now they consider me part of their family. And I have shared with them my oldest son's desire to become a Catholic priest someday. An incredible Catholic store in your area can be found at IncredibleCatholicStore.com. That's IncredibleCatholicStore.com. The Incredible Catholic Store, transforming the world one soul at a time.
Pope Francis said, "The key that opens the door to faith is prayer." Join St. Paul Street Evangelization by running a prayer station in the public square. You don't need to be a professional apologist or theologian. Just listen to the needs of the people you encounter. Offer encouragement, take prayer requests, and pray with people. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Trent Horn, our guest this hour, our topic, arguments for and against the existence of God. Folks watching all around the world on Facebook, YouTube, and Periscope, thanks for joining us. And from Facebook, Jeanette asks, "I had an atheist ask me, where is this heaven? With all the times they have gone out into space, no evidence of heaven there." How do we answer a question like that, Trent?
Yes, it's located on the dark side of the moon that we never end up seeing.
That is such a Pink Floyd answer.
Right. Well, heaven is an interesting place. We know that heaven is our ultimate home and the place where we will reside with God and the saints and receive the beatific vision. And we also know that heaven will be the kind of place where people will have embodied existence. People sometimes erroneously think that in heaven we will be angels, or they think that we'll just be like spirits. Now, it's true, right now the souls of the departed, those who have died in God's friendship and have not gone to purgatory, are in heaven. There are souls in heaven. But not until the resurrection of the dead will they be reunited with their bodies. But as Catholics, of course, we believe that the Blessed Mother, Mary, she was assumed body and soul into heaven. So heaven is a place where bodily existence is possible, but heaven is not a location within our universe. So you can't say, well, where is it? It's not in space residing outside of planet Earth. It has spatial properties to it, but it's not a part of this universe. So where is it? The best way I could answer that is to make an analogy that the relationship between heaven and earth might be similar to the relationship between different dimensions. So if we understand existence having in different dimensions, now I am not saying heaven is a literal dimension of our creation, but that there could be people, there could be existence in different dimensions that are inaccessible from our perspective in the third dimension. For example, in 1884, Edwin Abbott published a book called Flatland, A Romance of Many Dimensions. And it talks about the idea of, could it be possible for, what would it be like for a three-dimensional being like me to communicate to a two-dimensional stick figure? And the stick figure hears me, and the stick figure tells the other stick figures, oh, there's the world where the creator is, you know, and he made us. And they ask him, well, where is it? And they walk all around on the paper, and they don't find it. Where is it? And they say, well, it's, you know, we want to say it's up there. But they say, well, what do you mean up? You know, for them, they only, there's only four ways to look. We have, you know, they can't comprehend six different directions. So it might be similar that the way God has created his creation and where heaven exists, there is a dimensional quality to it that allows us to exist in a different way in communion with him, that separates us from earth. Like kind of, you know, there's this, this veil, essentially.
Thanks, Jeanette, very much for that. And thanks for everybody who joins us streaming online. 888-318-7884 is our number. We go now to Colin in San Francisco, California, listening on Immaculate Heart Radio. Colin, thanks for calling. What's your question for Trent Horn?
Hi, Si. Hi, Trent. My question is, why couldn't the universe and the Big Bang be self-existent? If you had something like God that exists outside of time, you have to invent a realm in which we don't see anything existing. If God exists or something else exists for infinity, then and has infinitely existed, then there was an infinite amount of time before it, there is anything caused us in our current universe to exist. And that's kind of a weird way to think about it, since from the start of God's existence, we would have been existent infinitely later. So how did we ever come about? What I think makes the most sense is that for all time and space, the universe has existed, and that's what we see with the Big Bang. And there's no time before the Big Bang for anything else to exist. So that, to me, looks like self-existence.
Well, I think we have a problem. The problem being two problems. One with the alternative hypothesis that you're proposing about the Big Bang being self-existent or self-caused might be a better term, and then the description of God, which actually poses a problem for the alternative explanation. Because, and I think you rightly pointed out, it would not make sense if we say that God existed prior to the creation of the universe for an infinite amount of time and then decided to create the universe. Because as you said, well, how did God get through all those infinite days, infinite moments, and then finally create us? That doesn't make sense. And I agree with you, it doesn't make sense. My proposal, the proposal of classical theism, is that God is timeless. Timelessness is not a different realm of existence. God is not in an existential space. God just is existence itself. God does not exist in anything. He just is. He's infinite being. He doesn't lack anything. And so God is perfect and does not change ever. He's just perfect knowledge, wisdom, and power. He just is. So if God does not change, God does not experience time, because time is a measure of change. Rather, God has perfectly willed, as part of his existence, to create a finite universe that includes time. And then part of that will is his interactions in the universe he creates, because he already knows what will happen in this universe, because he has all knowledge. So I don't think there's any problem in saying a timeless God, God who exists without change, has willed as part of his nature to create a finite universe. He makes time. So time has been made. We need an explanation. I think you would rightly say we couldn't have an infinite past because you couldn't get to the present. But you were proposing, Colin, well, maybe just the Big Bang, and let me make sure I get this right. You know, time has always existed for as long as the universe, so it's kind of self-existent in that every moment of time, the universe has always existed. There's nothing before, so there's nothing really to explain. I think that's what you said, and my response would be, but the first moment, T equals zero, that requires an explanation. Why is there a universe with time that began, there was nothing, and then something? What is the cause of that? It'd be like if I said, well, every moment of my life, I have always existed, so there was no cause that brought me into existence. Well, no, the T equals zero. my parents brought me into existence. So I think that's the problem there. So I've thrown a lot at you. What would you like to take from that if you'd like to dialogue a little more?
Right. You're inventing conceiving of a timeless realm, and then you're trying to play
cause and effect. Not timeless realm, just that God is timeless.
Right. Okay, so God's timeless. But then yes. What would be the time in which God, you said cause and effect require time, so there would have been no time before time to cause time to exist. I mean, this is the mental gymnastics that are created when you're trying to argue for this type of God.
No, I don't think so, because cause and effect, that what I said was that change is something that results with time. And cause and effect, there are obviously usually in our universe, you have a cause and then an effect later. But I would say for the universe coming into existence, that the cause, which is the effect, the universe comes into existence, and the cause, God creates the universe, are simultaneous. They happen at the same time, which is the first moment of time, or T equals zero, the first moment of time. The cause, which is God's creative power, exists at the same time as the effect, which is the universe coming to be. So the argument basically, anything that begins to exist has a cause. Otherwise, if you don't have God, what you have is you have nothing, and then you have something. But most of us agree that in the world, if something pops into existence, we naturally say there's got to be a cause for that. We wouldn't just say, well, it just happens. There's no need for an explanation. If we say that for things in the universe, it seems to apply to the universe as a whole without causing the fallacy of composition. But so you see the problem here that if we have nothing and then something, just because time came into existence at the beginning, we're still looking for a causal explanation for something from nothing, right?
No, I mean, you're saying nothing turned into something. That's, again, temporal, and we're talking about boundary and time.
Right, but
you're using.
Can something come from nothing, though?
No, and the universe, as the Big Bang may postulate, wouldn't. There was no time for something and nothing for the universe to come from.
But I'm not saying nothingness is just an empty space. What I'm saying is that the universe is 13.7 billion years old. Even if there's a multiverse, whatever that is, I'm saying there's billions of years in the past. There was a beginning, but there was a state of nothing. There was no space. There was no time. There was just nothing. And then suddenly a beginning. That there is a beginning. There's a boundary to creation. Why is it that there is something rather than just no thing?
Maybe it would help if I put it this way. The space-time are one thing. You have space-time. Would you be okay with a universe that had a boundary in space, that had an edge in space? Would you think that there had to be something beyond that boundary for the space to exist?
Well, I think if there's a boundary, then that tells us, well, what are its makeup, its things like that. But I do think, yeah, you can have space and time as part of a four-dimensional block, so to speak. But time, I think, is really a different reality than space, because space, there's not a preferred direction or causal direction in space, but there is a causal direction with time. When we look at a map, we don't ask for the cause necessarily of why different cities are separated from each other, but we ask for the cause of why one city exists at one time and not another.
All right, we'll have to leave it there. We got to go.
We're out of time there. But yeah, so when something begins to exist, time is different than space, and it requires a causal explanation.
All right, we'll be right back after this on Catholic Answers Live.